Risk Assessment Accelerator. So, without further ado, both.
Indeed. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for bearing with us as well. I appreciate it. We're nearly at the end of the day, but we have something very exciting to show you. Now, what's going to happen today is slightly unscripted. Now, we know how the AI performs, but how it will perform today against the audience is what we're here to test, right? So, you up for the challenge? Everyone up for the challenge? Yes, good. All right, let's keep it going. Yes, yeah, so I'm Craig Martin. That's Jen. Jen is going to be on the roaming mic today, so please work with her as well, and we'll explain what we're going to do. So, appreciate we've only got 20 minutes, but I'm going to talk to you about one of the most important slides. I love this slide. Why? Because it shows, ultimately, in 2025, how the performance gap in terms of large language models has closed. Okay, and what this graph shows is essentially that large language models, so generative AI models that we're using today that are being integrated as part of our lives, are becoming more powerful with greater reasoning capabilities. And you can see the shift from where we were a year ago when I spoke to you to where we are now. And you can see that the performance gap is closing. And more large language models are reaching what we define as human expert level. So capable, of course, of being able to retrieve information, but also to reason in a greater way. So that's just a bit of context for you today. Now, in terms of what else has happened just in the last year, we also rolled out the FRA Accelerator as a beta service. And what we're really pleased to see, of course, is the number of public bodies that are now utilising that capability. Based on my last count, we had 33, and the number is continuing to grow. Okay, and really what the tool does, in essence, is it takes your data, your scheme. We therefore use generative AI with a lot of different prompting, a lot of behind the scenes work, let's say, all right, to in essence condition the large language model to act as an adversary. And what the adversary is therefore doing is it is working out where the loopholes in your scheme might be, so that in turn, that will in turn empower you to be able to identify where there are potential gaps in your scheme so that you can design better controls and mitigate fraud. That is the intention, right? But let's be clear. This tool is not designed to replace you. It's designed to support you, okay? So that's really important. So let's continue. Rules of the game. So in a moment, Jen is going to talk you through the scenario, okay, and the scheme that we're going to cover. But there's two things that I want you to do. Talk to your neighbour. But in doing so, you need to think like a fraudster. So we're going to give you the scheme, we're going to give you the scenario, and then I want you to identify three ways in which you may seek to defraud the scheme. Sound like a plan? Okay. And whilst that's happening, of course, I'm going to run the scheme through the tool. Okay, so Jen, over to you, if that's okay.
Thanks, Craig. Okay, so those of you who would like, you can scan the QR code and it'll take you straight to the gov.uk page that tells you all the details. But a quick summary, basically we are looking at the childcare grant, which is for full-time students who have childcare responsibilities. You can see the maximum benefits, 200 a week for one child, 340 a week if you've got two or more children. The eligibility, you have to be a full-time student, so more than 120 credits. You have to be a permanent resident in England. And there's various other criteria around income, so household income, and other benefits that you might receive, so tax-free childcare, NHS-funded childcare, things like that. The age of your child has to be less than 15. They can be 17 if they have SEN criteria. And the childcare provider has to be a registered provider through various sort of schemes. An interesting way about how it is paid. So the funds are paid into an online account. The childcare provider bills that account. The parent then logs in and authorises the payment. And then the funds are paid directly to the childcare provider. So yes, we are going to run the scheme, run the accelerator. The accelerator takes that document, the print version of what you have linked to. So here we've got all of the information. It's a multi-page document, PDF'd, and we run it in our scheme. So you're going to have the time it takes for us to complete the demo. You essentially, it's web-based. You log in through Microsoft, upload your PDF file. So this is just the details of your scheme. You can add additional guidance documents. We're not going to in this case. And then the tool will run. It will take about 2 to 3 minutes. So in that 2 to 3 minutes, I'd like you to turn to your neighbour and have a think about the top three ways that you would defraud the scheme.
Indeed.
You could all think like a fraudster. I know it. Plenty of people in this room.
Ready?
The percentage bar is your doom. Have your chat. We're at 60%. Oh, we're at 100. Whoa. There we go.
Great. So if I can ask you to wrap up your conversations, I'm going to come round the room and ask for you to give me the top one fraud risk. So you'll have come up with three. Do I have any volunteers for someone to go first? Yeah.
Can we take a note of those?
Come up with three or 4 points. Included, work hard. Partnering with a provider, exaggerated child number, adoption certificate forgery.
Great. Okay, so adoption certificate forgery, you mean childcare?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Okay. And then partnering up with a childcare provider as well.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
great. That collusion side.
It's all okay.
Yeah. Do we have one in the middle? Can we pass a mic in? Thank you.
You could lie about having children.
Yeah, lie about having children. Absolutely. Yeah.
You could lie that you're not a full-time student.
Sorry, say that again?
Full-time student. You can lie about...
Yeah. Lie about your student status, how many credits you're taking, etc. Should we just go...
Yep.
Residency. You could say that you've...
Say that you're living in England.
In Wales, for an argument's sake, and then...
Yep. Absolutely. And one just in front of you as well there?
excuse me, Mick Hopkins from... Heart SAFs, sorry, create a number of also fake childcare companies.
Yep, so fake yourself as a childcare company in order. To get around that sort of lock.
I'd also get the identities of dead children so I could make it go.
Okay, deceased. Ah. Yeah, deceased identity fraud, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Let's see if the AI has come up with that. Very good. Okay.
So I've got one more in the front. Is there anyone else who has a great idea that they think we've not covered? Great. Yeah. Okay, so falsifying your income so that you meet the income threshold. Yep.
False.
Okay, yep. Falsifying the SEN status of your child, yeah?
But both parents could try and claim it separately.
Both parents claiming, yeah. And potentially in different households. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, yeah, go for it.
You can decide to drop out of school. Yeah, after...
And keep claiming.
Yeah. Okay, keep claiming.
Interest. That's a good one, yeah. Okay, brilliant. Okay, Craig, shall we go to see what the AI has come up with?
Indeed, and literally, I'm going to show you this as well. So I had to come off screen, because otherwise I'd give you the answers, right? You know, because I don't want to show you the outfit straight away. So I just want to recap, all right? So what was the last one? Drop out of school, but continue to claim. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, absolutely. So we'll make a note of that one. So drop out or... No, I'm going to keep that specific to drop out, not continue, right?
Yeah.
and continue to claim. So can I just play back what I've heard, right? Just so, and then we'll come on. So the audience said, first and foremost, that you might falsify your student status overall in terms of the fact that you are a student, first and foremost, to claim childcare. You could falsify your residency and or address. What's the other one? False income.
Yep, so we had falsifying your income. We also had falsifying the whether you have children or not. So yes, lying about having children.
False childcare, yes, yes,
ways.
Yes.
Dual claiming with parents, you know, not declaring the other parent's claiming. And fake providers. Okay.
Fake providers. Perfect. All right, well, let's have a look then, shall we? Shall we have a look? So what I've done, bear in mind, and just to prove that everything is run, I'm going to take the draft that you can see today. It's just run at 16:19. Timestamp, 18:16, 15 seconds. So that was 5 minutes ago. Okay, so let's have a look at what has been produced. And this is what you get from the accelerator. And I will zoom in so that people are able to see. So what the AI, in essence, for this scheme, and it's quite a lot of potential risks, some 60 different ways in which the scheme might be defrauded. Okay, so there's a lot there. So let's have a look at the most pertinent ones that the AI has already found as well. So can you see that? Do I need to make that bigger for you? Let me know. I can go bigger. Okay, let me see. I can probably go bigger. Does that work? Can people still see? Okay, yeah. Absolutely. So, so this is what we get in terms of an output. So we've got the actor, action, and outcome output. So on the first risk that was identified, submitting false information about childcare costs or number of children to inflate grant entitlement. Do you think that probably meets the bill in terms of false child?
I think it's actually a little bit nuanced to the, it's taking one and multiplying, you know.
Indeed. Should we look for the next one as well? So the piece on residency. Now, let's have a quick look here. Now,
while Craig is finding one about lying about your residency, this is a starter for 10. As you can see, there are 60-odd risks. When you actually work to the rest of your fraud risk assessment, you might find that actually some of them, you can bring them together. And that's fine. But we don't want the AI to bring them together because we think that's actually quite important that you as fraud risk assessors do that piece yourself. And it's about the controls that are put in place. It's about further down the line. Have we got a residency one?
Yes. Well, we have one. We have the using temporary accommodation addresses to claim for multiple grants in different regions, which is very likely. So that's what we've come up with there. Should we have a look for the
income?
Other ones? Yes, income. We've got quite a few for income.
Yep.
So failing to report a change in household income that would make them ineligible or reduce their entitlement.
Can I just ask really how they're numbered? Is that just random or is it
Indeed, absolutely. So bearing in mind, yes, go on.
Yeah, so it is random. We have put the archetype in here based on the Fraud Act, but at the moment the order is random.
Indeed. And bear in mind, that's where you come in. Ultimately, what we're giving you is a set of risks that could occur within the scheme. But ultimately, your role then is to qualify these risks and indeed to therefore make an assessment of likelihood and impact based upon the probability of that risk occurring. So really what the tool is doing is that it's in essence screening the scheme and indeed working out how that might be defrauded. So really, the tool is there to assist you in the first stage of your fraud risk assessment, okay?
Shall we just do a quick search for student status? Because that's both if your student status changes or if, in fact, you lie about how many credits you're studying or something like that.
Indeed. So we have the not reporting that the applicant has left.
So actually, it got that fairly niche one there.
Providing a false Ofsted registration or register details to appear eligible. Failing to declare a change in marital status that affects the income thresholds. Interesting. I know Matt, you mentioned, Matt's left, hasn't he? But but again, that could be obviously relevant to, you know, the point around both, you know, parents still claiming when only one is entitled. Okay. What else have we got as well? So we have both parents claim.
Yeah, Yep, falsifying evidence about special educational needs. Yep. Things around childcare registration details. Yep. Multiple applications. So as you can see, it is quite specific in the risks it is giving you. And yeah, so that's why we make a big point about the human in the loop part of it, where actually it is then for you guys to look at these and you might combine some together. You might even split them out. Yeah.
Indeed. And I think one of the other things that we would say is that bearing in mind the tool is not just looking at what the applicant can do, it's looking at all of the actors that might be involved in the supply chain. And of course, when you look at these, of course, you've got the potential for internal fraud by Student Finance England staff, e.g. within the organisation, e.g. Approving applications in collusion. So we know that that is a pertinent internal fraud risk. But also, obviously, it covers the third-party risk, the risk of childcare providers also colluding with the student to falsify that they have provided childcare when they haven't. So, in essence, what the tool is doing is it is coming up with a whole range of plausible risks and indeed scenarios that could occur based upon the input that we added into the scheme. And this is what I uploaded to the document. So this was the readout. So this was a simple overview of the scheme, what you'll get, and of course what you have therefore is the eligibility criteria. So in essence, what we've got is that the AI is in essence playing the role as an adversary and indeed stress testing the policy or scheme from the outset. So, yeah, I guess within the space of a few minutes, what we've taken is largely quite a time-consuming process when it comes to actually having to read all of the information about the scheme design and getting to a point quite quickly whereby we can actually accelerate that process and get to the point of actually looking at how that scheme might be defrauded relatively quickly. But as I've said, it still requires your expert judgment and indeed for you to review those risks in order to complete the remaining stages of the fraud risk assessment, which is about, of course, looking at controls and indeed looking at the effectiveness of those in mitigating risk overall. So, any questions at all? You have a couple. Okay.
There is technically a limit, but 200 pages would be well within it. We've never hit the limit. Do you know the limit off the top of your head? 200 megabytes.
Is it better to have more concise or
better? The model doesn't mind. That I think that's one of the benefits of generative AI.
Yeah.
And there was one kind of directly behind you. Yeah.
Yeah. This is just a radical risk, right? The prompts test the documentation, test the rules and so on, and then figure out a way to do it. But have you considered as a next step actually doing an agentic thing that tries to do it for real, and then you report on whether it succeeded?
Where does it stop? I'm not sure I can quite grasp your
question. So I think the question is about can we take it to the next level and actually try to defraud the scheme ourselves.
Let an AI agent do it for real. And
indeed. Bearing in mind, if I can explain. So bearing in mind, what we've got is we've got a multi-agent workflow that's already integrated as part of the tool, not only to identify the risk, but then also to refine those. So that's actually happening. So we are using multiple large language models chained together in order to deliver this. Now, in terms of the next step, of course, there's always an option for us to add in like controls. And that's something that we are looking at and we're going to explore it. But one of the things that we're also mindful is that generative AI does have certain limitations. And bearing in mind, there's no guarantee that without the relevant contextual knowledge in relation to the control and its effectiveness, that the LLM would be able to identify where there are still residual risks within the scheme. Because bearing in mind, large language models are a prediction based upon similarity, okay? But what it may not have is that contextual information, which may largely be restricted to your internal organization, that the model might need. So we're going to look at that as a potential development in the future, but at this stage, what we've done is built the tool largely to assist in the first stage of the process. I hope that helps.
I like the creative thinking, though. We'll definitely, you know, take that, take it as an idea and sort of put it out to our users. Okay, so we have time for one more question.
Quickfire as well.
Okay, super quick. Can we fit in two?
Two very quick fire,
okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to be quick.
Okay. Yeah, just to say that we're part of the beta test. We're a local authority, the only one part of this. And we are finding some really good results coming
Thank
out.
Thank you.
And we're testing on used cases. So where we've done a human risk assessment, we are testing it through the accelerator and comparing.
Indeed, so, indeed.
Thank
and
you.
That's very useful to know. Thank you very much.
Just a quick one. Does that tool go on to the next level, having identified the risks, it could then come up with recommended controls?
So no, that's what Craig was kind of just alluding to there. Yeah. We're thinking about doing that next, but at the moment, we think it's quite important for the human to really be involved in that next step. Did you have a question?
It's okay.
Good, thanks. Okay, sorry, I would love to just answer questions all day about this, but please do catch us afterwards. We'll be up at the PSFA stall. I'd love to answer questions all day.
Absolutely, no. Okay. Just
thank you.
Thank you very much. Give a round of applause. Thank you very much.